Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
Happy Thursday, as it's another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Deshaun Watson continues to pop up in the NFL news cycle, even when he's not playing, buried in the Houston Texans organization. Well, yesterday, it was reported by John McClain in the Houston Chronicle that a deal could be done by the end of this week with the Miami Dolphins to send Watson to Miami. And it could be a potential three-team trade, including the Washington football team, sending Tua to Washington. Then there was another report that came out that Washington hadn't talked to Miami about getting Tua. We all know the situation with Deshaun Watson, with the NFL investigating for 22 massage therapists accusing him of sexual misconduct. And the Texans already weren't going to play him before that came out because of the disputes he had with the organization. Wanted out, wanted to be traded. And then it appeared through these first 5 weeks that we were just never going to see Deshaun Watson this season. And we're likely never going to see him again in the NFL. He had as a court date, Marco and I were talking about this before the show, I believe it is set in February. I could be wrong in that. I know it's after the season. So until that point, if there's no other investigation going on, there's nothing they can pursue further with, and Miami makes the deal, they could theoretically play him. And the Dolphins right now are on a 5-game losing streak. They won the first game of the season, now completely sliding. Gave the Jacksonville Jaguars their first win of the season. And now they likely know that they're going to need a Hail Mary to make even the wild card. They're not winning the AFC East over the Buffalo Bills. They have a very outside chance of reaching the postseason. It appears, with this rumor circulating, that Tua Tagovailoa is not the answer in Miami. He's been one of the top picks that really just didn't pan out. And sometimes those Alabama quarterbacks don't pan out. They have so much talent around them, they're not asked to do much in that system. When you look back at those Alabama quarterbacks, A.J. McCarron, Jalen Hurts, and now with Tua, those type of guys recently, they don't have to do that much in college. Now, they're star players. They're 5-star recruits coming out of high school, but Alabama's so good. They have all this talent just surrounding the roster and a Hall of Fame head coach that they're able to just shine wherever they're at. And then when you get to the NFL and you're drafted by a lesser organization, at the time Miami was, they had traded for that draft pick, but they were nowhere near being a Super Bowl contender. Just like how Alabama is always a national title contender. You have to build from the quarterback out. And Miami tried to, but Tua just isn't as good as the other quarterbacks in that division. And now they're looking to get a guy like Deshaun Watson, who Marco did just confirm that his court date is going to be in February. But how bad does that reflect on Miami's organization? You're on a 5-game losing streak, and now you're willing to trade away, if these reports are true, you're willing to trade away your former top first-round pick to bring in a guy like Deshaun Watson, who right now had 22 massage therapists come forward accusing him of sexual misconduct. Now, when that court date is set in February, okay, we don't know what's going to happen then. But let's say Miami gets this deal done and Deshaun Watson comes in and they start Deshaun Watson. Because if nothing else comes forward, he should be eligible to play. He's not suspended right now by the NFL. It's just Houston not playing them. Houston's not going to play him this year. But that's also not what everybody else is willing to do. Miami, if they get the deal done, would be willing to play him in my eyes, or else why would you be getting the deal done? So if this does happen this week and Deshaun Watson becomes a Miami Dolphin, how much respect do you have for Miami's organization? I guess you throw out what they're getting back. I mean, do you want to play a guy like Deshaun Watson to get you wins? Are you confident moving forward that he's not going to be guilty of all these accusations? Because I believe the fear that Houston has in trading him is that if we trade him this year and he goes to his court date in February and it turns out that he's not guilty, Miami then has, again, a top five quarterback in this league. Somebody that was leading Houston to be one of the better teams in the AFC. On the other hand, if you're Miami and you trade for him and you haul off a first-round pick, a couple first-round picks, second-round pick, maybe a player in there, you mortgage a lot of your future, and that court date comes and he is guilty and he's done and he's out of the NFL, now look what you've done. You traded away Tua. You have no quarterback. You have to go back through the draft, but oh wait, you traded all of your first-round picks. I just feel like there's too much to lose in this from Miami. Right? I mean, there's just, you can get Deshaun Watson, yes, and he's a top five quarterback, but there's so much to this story. 22 massage therapists came forward accusing him. And if you're confident, maybe it's something that we don't know. Marco had a great point before the show today. He said maybe there's stuff in the front offices that we don't know. The media, other fan bases, they may have an inside track on what's going to happen with Deshaun Watson down the road. Which is why now maybe trade rumors are heating up. I just feel like Houston can gain so much from this deal, and Miami is really walking out on a limb here. They are in a dangerous situation that could derail their franchise for the next couple of years. We know Buffalo is going to have first place locked up for a while. As long as Josh Allen's there and they continue to build around him, they're going to have no problems winning that division. Now, second place is kind of up for grabs. Right now, I'd put my money on New England. I don't think the Jets or Miami are anywhere close. And if Miami goes and gets Watson, I'm not even confident they're going to be able to make the wild card this year. Is one quarterback like that going to win you 9 of the next 10 games? I don't think so. When he did play for Houston in those years where they weren't a playoff team right after they faced the Chiefs in the divisional round, the Texans weren't good last year. And Deshaun played. Now, I think Miami has a little bit more talent, but they're not world beaters. So if you're willing to think that Deshaun Watson can get you to the promised land this year because you really have a lot of uncertainty when February comes around, and Miami looks like they're just praying and hoping that if they were to get this deal done, then Deshaun Watson will be their quarterback next year. But Houston in this scenario, right, if they deal Deshaun Watson and Deshaun Watson continues to play, they still got a haul. Probably a couple of first-round picks, player here or there, maybe a second, a third. They can get a haul for him. Holding on to him right now might be logical too. Because if you hold on to him, you don't play him this year, and then he's eligible again next year if he's not guilty when going to court in this situation. I don't know where I'm leaning toward right now, where this will all eventually fall, all the dominoes falling. Maybe he ends up being guilty, maybe not guilty. It's been so quiet up front for the last couple of months. You don't know if Deshaun is going to ever play again, or maybe he plays next week. That's how uncertain this whole thing is. But now all of a sudden we're bringing his name back up because of this trade rumors. We knew Miami was always a possible destination. I just didn't expect it to be this season. After it sort of circulated in the offseason and then it went quiet again, I thought, well, he's just going to be buried in Houston and then probably never going to play again. Marco, when you look at this trade rumor, we don't have much other than that. We don't know what would be going back to Houston. We really just know that Miami's interested in Deshaun Watson and that the Dolphins have intensified their pursuit after losing five games in a row. Do you think this is a possible deal to get done? I guess, what percentage do you give this deal of getting done, not only soon, but this week?
10%. I don't think it's something that's going to happen by Sunday. Maybe it's a Monday type thing, depending on the interest that Washington has in Tua. Uh-oh, spoiler alert. That's where I think he's going to go. Washington. Washington, is a place where is a need for quarterback. I saw some things on Twitter about them being a possible third team in this kind of a trade rumor. So I like the idea of Tua going there. But between Washington and Houston, what's so crazy about this is Miami and Houston. Miami is projected to have the most cap space this offseason. So if they get Deshaun Watson, then you can say bye-bye to a lot of the money that you're going to be having available based on Deshaun Watson's contract if Miami gets him. Now, the assets that Miami has, they do have a first, a second, possible third round picks for the 2022 draft. Then, of course, in 2023, they have a pick in every round. So Houston, a team that we made fun of in the past because they were giving up a bunch of their picks for odd transactions, one that make you second guess. They have a pick in every round for 2022. So each team has the assets. Miami has the capital as far as cap space goes, but once again, it's that whole why. Why are you making this trade for Watson? And once again, what do you know that a lot of people who pay attention to the NFL, read about the NFL, tune into the NFL, what they don't know as well? And so from the outside looking in, I just wouldn't make that investment if I'm Miami. But if there's something that they know and they feel like it's a big payoff if they get Deshaun Watson, they have the funds, they have the assets. So, but as far as getting it done by Sunday, this week, maybe even next week, by next Sunday, I'm still keeping it at 10%. It would be such a weird trade to make because they're 1-5 right now, and we talked about it before the show started. The AFC is not a cakewalk when it comes to making the playoffs.
See, I think this has to be known. This knowledge of what's going to happen to Watson has to be known by one organization, right? Because if both know what's going to happen to him, then a deal's not going to be done, right? Think about it. If Miami knows something that Houston doesn't, they know somehow that Watson is not going to have any issues. He will be able to play. Mm-hmm. And Houston doesn't, then you're able to leverage and say, hey, we'll trade with you. We just want to see what happens. But if Houston knows what Miami does and that Watson is not, he will be able to play, he's not going to be found guilty somehow, then they go, why would we trade you him? Why would we just give you a top five quarterback in this league? It doesn't matter how many picks you give us. But if the Texans know something, maybe the Texans know he's going to be found guilty or they know he's not going to be able to play again and Miami doesn't know that, then you could leverage picks mm-hmm. and say, oh, we may know that he's going to be available to play, but we need first here and there. We need a first, second, third, throw in Jalen Waddle or something like that. It's all, I just feel like in this situation, both these organizations can't know the outcome. Only one should. Because a deal's not going to happen either way. If both of them know he's not going to play again, why would a deal happen? If both know he is, why would Houston give up Deshaun Watson? Maybe it's because he doesn't want to play there. That was before all this came out. He wanted out of there. He feuded with the front office. He didn't like the coach. He didn't like the GM. He didn't like all the trades. And that's fair criticism. And maybe that's just going to forever continue. You know, there's so much tension. I think so much hatred for that organization. Deshaun Watson never wants to play for Houston again. But unfortunately, they control his future with that contract.
Mm-hmm.
They decide whether he's going to play, even if he's found not guilty. They decide whether he's going to play or not.
If I'm Houston, like you said, why would you want to trade a top five quarterback that you have retained, you have given him a contract extension and all of that? My reason for Houston to trade him is because no matter what the outcome of the situation is, I don't think Deshaun Watson wants to come back and play for Houston. I don't know. I feel like Deshaun Watson is like, okay, no, All right, as far as to situations in the organization, not outside the organization as of what they have done. Deshaun Watson is kind of like Ben Simmons right now, and I'm not saying that Ben Simmons has done what Deshaun Watson has done off field. No, not at all. I'm just saying I don't think Deshaun Watson wants to be a part of the Houston organization if his NFL career does continue on. I think if Houston, this is a great chance for you to just kind of restart. Because even when Deshaun Watson was playing last season, you told me they went 4-12. That's kind of the same. It's like, all right, it's a good chance for Houston to just have a fresh start. You get an insane amount of draft picks. You free up an insane amount of cap space. There's maybe not going to be a quarterback like Deshaun Watson in this draft, but come on, there's going to be another quarterback for you in the future. Just take the fresh start if you are offered a trade, but I understand if you don't turn it down because Deshaun Watson is a damn good NFL quarterback, and once again, we can only speculate because we only know what's given out to the public, and what's given out to the public is just nothing that gives us a for sure answer, and so that's why we're left to play the what if game. And you know, if Miami makes an offer for Houston and it's got four draft picks and maybe a player, then if I'm Houston, I'm picking up the phone.
I mean, I would too. It just feels like in this whole situation with Houston, they're trying to hold on to Watson because they want to have that power over him. And sometimes that's just being run by a bad organization, right? We always hear about players requesting trades in every league. They want out. And usually the front office says, no, we don't want to keep a guy around here that doesn't want to be here. If you don't want to be here, then we'll find somewhere else for you to play. But that would have happened by now. They would have found a way to get rid of him, even when this came out, release him. But they want to hold on to him because I don't think they want him being released or traded elsewhere and succeeding and beating them. And the Dolphins are in the AFC, same with the Texans. So they would see him. And so I think they just want to see how this plays out, which is why I believe this trade is probably not going to happen, because if Houston's ever going to get a deal done, it's going to have to floor them, and it's probably going to be a team from the NFC because they just don't want to play him every other year. You know, so that's my take on this whole Watson to Miami situation. But if you hadn't heard, apparently a trade rumor is circulating, and John McClain, with the Houston Chronicle, said that trade talks have intensified or could be on the verge of happening by the end of this week for a deal. Deshaun Watson going to Miami. What happens to Tua Tagovailoa? Not sure. Will there be a third team involved? Really, it's all up in the air. All we know is that apparently Miami has interest in Deshaun Watson. When we come back here on The Shift, we have a fun segment to go back and forth about, as well as preview Thursday night's game between the Cleveland Browns and the Denver Broncos. Talk about the player the Royals are getting back in the Danny Duffy trade. And, of course, compare one playoff team to the Kansas City Royals for next season. You've listened to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back in to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Marco, have you seen Squid Game?
Absolutely.
Finished it?
Yes. You?
I have. Yeah, I finished it a couple days ago. But the reason I bring it up is because I saw a hilarious tweet this morning that if you were in Squid Game and one of the games was you had to tackle Derrick Henry running full speed, no pads, how would you eventually just be beaten up to the point where you're broken leg, broken arm, or do you eventually think at one point? Because keep in mind, Derrick Henry eventually will lose stamina.
Yeah.
Right? He's got to run through you every single time. Could you eventually get him down one, or are you defeated and you're eliminated from the game?
I'm eliminated from that one. I think I don't even, you know, is it just one time? You just have to take one
no,
hit from
him?
No,
it's you got to keep going until you're either down and out or you've tackled Derrick Henry. He's got pads, though.
Oh.
You don't.
Oh, I'm dead. I'm dead. I'm not winning the money.
I think the first blow would pretty much end any possibility of me, because if he gets up to let's say he gets a 10-yard running start,
yeah.
So he gets to build up some speed there, and you're flat-footed. I mean, broken ribs, broken shoulder, dislocated here and there.
How are you going to make another tackle?
that's a good point. So I'm with you. I think I don't win the money there. I think I'm down and out if Derrick Henry runs through me. But the reason I bring that up is because he is a player the Chiefs fear, right? Or Chiefs fans fear. I think the players are pretty confident in their ability to stop Derrick Henry. But in the years we've all been a Chiefs fan, who are the players that struck the most fear in you, right? Derrick Henry seems to be the new guy. Anytime you hear the Chiefs playing the Titans, it's got to face Derrick Henry. He can pretty much dictate the outcome of this game, and he's one of the few running backs that can do that. Might be the only running back in this league that can do that. But over the past couple of years, or go back as long as you want to think, who were players that just made you shake in your boots, had nightmares about? I have three on my list. I'm curious who Marco has. He may agree with some of mine. But when I went through the numbers of some of these players, they really weren't that effective. One guy was,
mm-hmm.
And I think we all know who I'm going to be talking about. But the other two were really not as good as I'd expected them. Still good numbers, but when I thought of their name, I was like, there's no chance the Chiefs have had any type of success. But the first guy on my list, and it was Peyton Manning. Right? When Peyton Manning was in Indianapolis, he eliminated you two times,
mm-hmm.
I believe it was.
Yeah, twice. No punt game.
No punt game, and that game in Indianapolis. I'm struggling with in Indianapolis. There were a couple of missed field goals by Kansas City. It wasn't really close, but he had eliminated you twice. Then he comes to Denver, and he's in your division, and the only time you can really beat him is at the tail end of his career when he got benched late in that game in Denver, and Brock Osweiler had to come in. It was like the worst game Peyton Manning had ever had. Had four picks in the first half.
Yeah.
I mean, just completely looked like a shell of what he once was. But shockingly, in those two games, he was 12-2 in 14 games against Kansas City. Had a 60% completion percentage. So I think a lower end, I thought that would be a little bit better. But the number that just stands out to me is those 12 wins. In his entire career, there was, let's see here, let's count them up. Chargers, he won double digits against. The Raiders, double digits against. Chiefs, double digits. Jaguars, double digits. Houston, double digits. Those are the only teams. So every team in his division, he completely blew through the AFC West when he came to Denver. And mm-hmm. that was later in his career.
Mm-hmm.
But you just knew every time the Chiefs faced Peyton Manning, it was just not going to be fun. One of the worst experiences I had in a Chiefs game against Peyton Manning, I was there. It was 2013, the first year Andy Reid was there. The Chiefs were undefeated, had an easier schedule,
mm-hmm.
but welcomed Denver, who was still the team to beat, obviously. They were as high-powered as the Chiefs are now or have been the last 3 years, just based off explosive players. They were still really good on offense. Yep. But they came into Arrowhead, and Denver was undefeated or had one loss.
and the Chiefs jumped out early. Niall Davis had that 108-yard kickoff return. The Chiefs had pretty much jumped out to a 21-7 lead, I want to say. But here came Peyton Manning in the offense. You knew you couldn't hold him down for long. And in the very end, they win that game, and that was an undefeated Chiefs team. And you thought that was the time to finally overcome the struggles against Peyton Manning, but it didn't happen. And for those first couple of years while he was in Denver, you virtually had no success. Never could do anything against Denver. And that's weird to think about because the Chiefs haven't lost to Denver since that Jamal Charles fumble game. Since Jamal Charles was the Kansas City Chiefs, the Denver Broncos haven't beat Kansas City. But back when Peyton Manning was there, the Chiefs lost all the time. Sweeps every single year, it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
But he is number one. He's the Freddy Krueger. He's the Jason, the Mike Myers, the Michael Myers,
yeah,
who you had the theme song of coming back from break. He's the guy you fear. Number two on this list, and this is why I don't understand how the numbers aren't much better. Maybe it's because early on in his career, he entered the league in 2001. The Chiefs had that 2003 team. Defense wasn't that great, but they had some good teams in that early span. It feels like in the 2000s. But LT, LaDainian Tomlinson, in San Diego at the time, he was only 10-8 against the Chiefs. I thought for some reason, it felt like back then, and then once we reached the mid-2000s, Chargers would win majority of those games. But LT in those 18 games rushed for over 1,500 yards. He had over 500 receiving yards.
Wow.
Yeah, so totally dynamic in every aspect of that game. 13 touchdowns, 15 total, 13 rushing, 15 total. 4.5 yards per attempt. And where do we kind of draw the line in production from a running back? Is it over 5 yards when you look at really good running backs, or is it just get over four? And I think you can kind of, because you get over a 4 yard rush, 2nd and 6, you set up your offense nicely. But remember Jamal Charles, that crazy year, again, has the all time yards per attempt. So, like, that's ludicrous in my mind. That's just absurd when a running back can get those numbers. But I feel like it would have been a lot more than 4.5 for LT, just the player that he was. Maybe it's because
because he was a multi-purpose back,
a receiving also, back as well.
Yeah, was getting a lot of yards while on the ground, I guess technically because he's a running back, but I mean on receptions too. But yeah, for rushing attempts, I would say anything over 4 yards an attempt is a pretty darn good running back. LT. And then, yeah, I can remember flashes of him where Chiefs had just needed to get a stop on a 3rd down and goal and LT, or not 3rd down and goal, but just a 3rd down stop. And LT would, it's kind of like those days where we talk about the 3rd and short with the Chiefs and teams would just be able to complete a short yard pass and get the yardage. It was just like that with LT. It was almost a guaranteed 1st down. Or you were going to give up a big chunk of yards every time he touched the football against Kansas City. Yeah, it's he is the definition of a Chiefs killer. That Chargers team, although there were some really bad Chiefs teams in the late 2000s, they couldn't stop the weapons that they had. They couldn't stop Vincent Jackson. They couldn't stop Antonio Gates, LT as well. Just that mix was lethal against Kansas City.
I mean, they had a bunch of options to go to.
Yeah.
I think it was it Malcolm Floyd, too?
Malcolm Floyd.
Malcolm Floyd. You know, Antonio Gates. So they were a passing offense. So maybe looking back, even having 1,500 yards with Phillip Rivers as a quarterback is incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
But he was number 2 on my list. Number 3, shouldn't be too much of a shock, it's Tom Brady. And it's been more recent that when you got into the postseason, you had to go through Tom Brady. This amazes me. There is one team in the NFL that has a losing record against Tom Brady. Tom Brady's a losing record against. I messed that up. It's the Seattle Seahawks. They played him 3 times. He's 1-2. There are only 2 other teams that are 500 against Tom Brady. It's the LA Rams, St. Louis Rams, I think, at the time. I think he had played them at least once or twice when they were St. Louis. And the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs are 5-5 against Tom Brady in 10 games. And when I saw that, blew me away. Right? It feels like when Tom Brady was in New England pre-2010, I couldn't remember a single time that the Chiefs beat Tom Brady. I, of course, remember that Monday night game.
Yep.
Against Tom Brady when they completely blew the doors off New England. I remember the game in Foxborough a couple years ago where Bashaud Breeland broke up the pass in the end zone. Right, those are the two main ones that come to mind, but it sticks out last year, Tampa Bay.
Yeah, don't forget the Thursday night opener when Chiefs crashed the party.
Yes, so there's four. Yep. I'm trying to think of the fifth.
It maybe was an early 2000s game when the Chiefs' offense was just, you know, one of the best offenses in the NFL. But I can look it up really quick as far as his game logs against the Chiefs. But yeah, it's crazy to think that the Chiefs are one of those teams that have given Tom Brady trouble over the years. It's a interesting fun fact, I guess. Something that Chiefs fans can take pride in knowing that they have, that their team has given the GOATs, we could say most trouble, because you said there's only one team he has against a losing record with,
and they've only played three games.
Just insane.
And that's where, when you look at all these teams that he's had success against, I mean, the craziest number I've seen, and we thought Aaron Rodgers' number was incredible against the Bears, when he goes in the crowd and says, "I've owned you, I've always owned you."
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady is 32-3 against the Buffalo Bills. If you want to talk about owning a franchise. But yeah, every other team, he's undefeated against them. He's undefeated against Minnesota. He's undefeated against the Atlanta Falcons. He's undefeated against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But only three teams, according to Pro Football Reference, have given him a lot of trouble. And the Chiefs have had to face him the most. Seattle's the only team that has a winning record against him, but it's only three games. The Rams have played him 6 times, or 3-3. The Chiefs have played him 10 times, and he's 5-5. 14 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. So really not impressive at all.
Well, I found that game from the early 2000s we were talking about where the Chiefs beat him for the first time in his career. It was in 2005. The Chiefs won 26-16. He had thrown 4 interceptions in that game.
Well, there's nearly half of the interceptions he's thrown. And we obviously remember that Monday night game. He threw 2, I believe it was. He had 1 to Hussein Abdullah, who had the pick 6 on it.
Yeah, he had 3 turnovers, 2 interceptions, and 1 lost fumble in that game.
Yeah, so 6 in 2 of those games.
But, of course, he's undefeated against them in the playoffs.
Yeah, that trumps all of it. You're undefeated in the playoffs. I guess the regular season doesn't matter. So, Marco, before we move on to our next segment, do you have anybody that keeps you up at night, a former opponent of the Kansas City Chiefs that really strikes fear into you, as we add another, and I'm going to go Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry's the fourth to that list, but my three were Peyton Manning, LaDainian Tomlinson, and Tom Brady.
Yeah, going back to those Manning teams, the Broncos, Eric Decker was always a guy that would own on the Chiefs. He had 4 touchdowns in that game you're referencing that you were at, where Kansas City had the 2-touchdown lead. No Sean Moreno, another running back who
out of Georgia.
Yeah, when he was with the Broncos, another player where it was just always kind of a guaranteed first down against them. As far as teams outside of Denver and maybe outside the AFC, I can't remember a time Oakland really owning the Chiefs or having a player who would be a very disruptive against Kansas City. Chargers, I think we nailed on all of them. But, yeah, Decker, no Sean Moreno was one.
Demaryius Thomas,
maybe another. Yeah, those were just dark days, man. Those were dark days against the Broncos.
Champ Bailey a little bit before that defensively.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of a defensive player who.
Charles Woodson,
maybe. Maybe back then when he was with the Raiders. But someone who just gave Chiefs Chiefs fans' nightmares when you went up against. I think we touched on, you know, the Mount Rushmores of them, especially with Peyton Manning. I hated playing Peyton Manning, man. Aaron Rodgers, too, may be one of those Chiefs killers that outside the AFC that you don't see all the time. Just hate going up against him because naming a time where the secondary was the best part of the defense in Chiefs history. I can't think of a time. And so when you go up against the elite passers,
they throw over you.
They do. They do. They absolutely do. And you remember the Aaron Rodgers touchdown, game-winning touchdown last year, 2 years ago when they played the Chiefs?
It was the Super Bowl year, yeah, when he went up against Matt Moore. He had the escape pressure and just kind of flung it up there.
Threw it on his
black. The back corner of the end zone, the only spot he could throw it to.
It's when you play – I hate playing against great quarterbacks because they always have those moments where it's like you think you got them, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's why they're such.
That's why they're so great. Yeah, there's a lot of guys you could go over in the past, and if you're a fan back that watched the Chiefs in the 80s and the 90s, I'm sure you have your pick of who it is. Everybody's seen a player that's given them nightmares, whether it was an Eric Decker or a Peyton Manning. We do have some football tonight referencing the Denver Broncos. They will play the very banged-up Cleveland Browns. And when I mean banged up, I mean walking wounded. Case Keenum will be starting at quarterback for the Browns. They're also without their dynamic duo of running backs in Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. So you're missing your starting quarterback, and you're down to your third-string running back. So who will they be going to? Is it Demetric Felton? John Kelly? D'Ernest Johnson? Probably D'Ernest Johnson would be my guess. So if you're playing fantasy, maybe pick up D'Ernest Johnson, because I think Cleveland still has an offensive line good enough to provide him with a good game. This, to me, is Denver's last chance this season to prove they can hang around in the AFC West. You lose to a brutally banged-up Cleveland Browns team, you're finishing dead last in the AFC West, and you're probably not winning more than six games. And they're on a three-game losing streak. Those three wins to start the season seem to be a little bit fluky. They got terrible opponents in the Giants, the Jaguars, and the Jets, wasn't it? They get two of the New York teams?
Yes.
I knew it was Jags and Giants. If it's not the Jets, it's another team that was winless at the time. Maybe the Falcons.
They did play the Jets.
It was the Jets. Yeah. But that's always going to come around to bite you sometimes. When you fall for that trap early on the season, you open up with an easy schedule. You're playing teams that just simply aren't that good. And then you just play better teams. That's when the trouble happens. And they truly haven't even played a great, great team yet. Right? They lost to Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. And yeah, the Steelers are 3-3. Are we really that fearful of Pittsburgh right now and Big Ben? That's an offense that really can't move the ball. Then you lost at home to the Raiders. The Raiders are 4-2. But are you fearful of the Raiders? Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. I'll give them that the scariest team they faced is Baltimore. Baltimore's a good team. They're 5-1. Best rushing team in the NFL. So, of your six games, one has been to a true playoff team. I'm not going to go as far yet to say the Raiders are, even though they're 4-2. But you get Cleveland tonight, and this is a weaker Cleveland team because of how many injuries they have. You lose to Cleveland, and yes, it is in Cleveland. You don't have much hope for the season anymore. Teddy Bridgewater was your guy. Now he's sort of regressing back because, you know, Teddy Bridgewater is a very conservative quarterback. He's not going to win many shootouts. You have to rely on your defense. And if your defense isn't playing well, which they haven't the last 3 weeks, they gave up 23, 27, and 34. You're not playing the Giants and Jets anymore. And you got Cleveland, Washington, Dallas, and Philadelphia after this. So your bye week was incredibly easy. But then on the back half of your schedule, after the bye week, you get the Chargers, you get Kansas City twice, you're at Vegas, Cincinnati, who's been better, and the Chargers again at the end of the season at LA. So the top two teams in your division, in my eyes, the Chiefs and the Chargers, you get twice. You also have to go on the road to Vegas. Cincinnati's not bad either. But your front half was so filled with easier teams to face. You got to win those gimmies, and they did early on, but now they're being tested, and it's not going well for them. And tonight is another test, but on a different level. Can you beat a team, a good team, that doesn't even have their starting running back or the two best options of their offense and their running game? I feel like this is Denver's last chance to sort of keep pace, because we know the Chiefs and the Chargers are about to start rattling off a lot of wins. And I don't know if they're going to be good enough to surpass the Las Vegas Raiders. That one will kick off tonight at 7:20 on Fox or NFL Network, depending which one you want to watch it on. Browns at home against the Denver Broncos. The line on that is, the spread is 1.5 right now in Cleveland's favor. The over-under set at 41. Low-scoring game, and I'd expect it to be one. Those are two pretty good defenses. We're going to switch into some baseball here before we go to break, and the news of yesterday pertaining to the Kansas City Royals, they did get the player to be named later in the Danny Duffy deal. Danny Duffy never threw one inning for the Los Angeles Dodgers, who are now on the brink of elimination against the Atlanta Braves. They got a 25-year-old Zach Willeman, who pitched in Double-A, has plus stuff, was a top prospect in their system, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. He's that 22 to 23 range. But all in all, a good pickup for the Dodgers not getting anything out of Danny Duffy. The fact that you got somebody with plus stuff, that's good enough in its own for, like I just said, Danny Duffy never pitched for the Dodgers. You'd think maybe you're getting a lottery ticket of just 18-year-old and low A or rookie ball. Maybe he pans out, maybe he doesn't. He will be Rule 5 eligible this offseason, so the Royals are going to have to make a decision where they want him on the 40-man or maybe the 25-man. I'd expect them to put him on the 40-man. I think they're going to need to make some tough decisions this offseason with some guys on the 40. He is 25 years old. He probably can make that jump, in my eyes, from a Double-A to the Major Leagues. We saw it this year. You know, those guys that are maybe older in the minor leagues, you got to make sure they have plus stuff. You can't go get a guy that's been in Double-A or Single-A at 23, 24, but, you know, throws to low 90s, maybe high 80s, doesn't really have any good secondary pitches. No, I think Willeman has a good set of pitches. I think he's got a great breaking ball. He had good numbers in Double-A. He was coming off Tommy John surgery, so he was kind of sitting low to mid-90s. I think you can live with that. And for half a season, maybe not even half a season of Danny Duffy, I'll take that. I will absolutely take that you can go take a flyer on a guy you scouted this season, who's a true reliever. There's no harm in finding some guys with plus stuff for your bullpen. When the Royals got Dylan Coleman for Trevor Rosenthal for not even 20 innings, 25 innings of Trevor Rosenthal, you got Dylan Coleman, who throws 101 with a wipeout slider. Those are the guys that you look for. Now, Willeman doesn't throw over 100, but the plus stuff we're talking about can work at the next level. He'll need to fine-tune a couple of things here and there. I'm sure that he probably won't open the year in the Royals' bullpen, but it's not to say that he can't make it there in the middle of the season. Relief pitchers always can find a little wiggle room in getting to the big league level, more so than maybe a shortstop or a center fielder. You know, some guy gets hurt in the bullpen. It happens all year. Guys go down with little shoulder impingement syndrome or whatever it was that seemed to hurt 5 or 6 Royals bullpen arms this season. That happens. Maybe you come up for a week. Maybe you stick. Maybe you don't. But really like the move overall to trade Danny Duffy. And now finally they get the guy that was the player to be named later in Zach Willeman or Zach Willman. I haven't heard it pronounced yet, but 25-year-old Double-A guy with plus stuff. Maybe it'll fly in the Royals bullpen next season, but when the Dodgers didn't get anything from Danny Duffy, getting something of value from the Dodgers is a win in my mind. When we come back here on The Shift, I'm going to give a comparison to a postseason team right now in the championship series to the Royals and how they can model them moving forward. You've listened to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back in to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. As always, I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Before we finish up on the show today, I was looking at the comparison that could be made between the Atlanta Braves and the Kansas City Royals, and how getting to the point where they are now, one win away from the World Series, could happen in the future for the Royals. The Braves took advantage of a division at their weakest point, the National League East. They were nowhere near being the favorite on the National League side to win it all. As I had mentioned, I always thought the winner of the Giants and Dodgers series was going to represent the National League in the World Series and eventually win it all. But the Braves are now up 3-1 on the Dodgers, and they got to that point by winning their division. They had the first two home games over the Dodgers, who had 106 wins. The Braves had 88. 18 less wins, but they have home field advantage because the Giants won 107. The Dodgers were a wild card team. But the Braves were 88-73 this year, and they won their division by 6.5 games. So taking advantage when your division is weak. At some point in time in the American League Central with the Royals, that division is going to be weak. It's probably going to be when the White Sox start to fall off again. Everybody in the Central has their run of the division. The Royals had it for a few years in 13, 14, 15. A little bit of 16 and 17, even though they weren't at the top of the division, they were still competitive. The Twins had it for a short period of time. Now the White Sox appear to have it. But on a season where maybe the White Sox just don't play as well, and they're in the 80-win season, that's where the Royals have to take advantage, and they have to be the 88-89-win team. Because like we saw with the Phillies, they're the team that didn't take advantage. They won 82 games and finished in second place. The Mets were 8 games under 500. If you can't take advantage when your division is weak, you're not going to be able to make the postseason because the Royals are likely never going to be a consistent 100-win team. They're not going to have the seasons like the Giants and the Dodgers do. They'll get the low 90-win seasons and sneak in to a wild card spot or win their division at that. So the National League East is not as strong as the American League Central in my eyes at its best. I mean, they got the start with Bryce Harper's on the Phillies, Lindor, Pete Alonso on the Mets. The Nationals just won the World Series not too long ago. They have the talent, but right now it was the weakest division in baseball, it felt like, this year. But when Cleveland and the White Sox and the Twins are good, that's a better division than the NL East. But take advantage when the Central is weak. And then now the Braves, they've built their offense. Though Acuna's out, they have the Ozzy Albies, the Austin Riley, the Freddie Freeman, Dansby Swanson. They got their core of hitters, which it feels like the Royals are doing now at the minor league level with MJ Melendez, Bobby Witt Jr., Nick Prado, Vinny Pasquantino. They're starting to build a collection of hitters. They always felt like maybe we'll go the pitching route. They're building a pretty good foundation in the offensive category. They've got some good hitters in the minor leagues, and once they get up to the big league level, it's putting those guys and surrounding them with the free agents, going out and being aggressive to add a corner outfielder, a third baseman. Now, I think the Royals have a lot of major league ready player guys now, but you'll still have to go out and add a big bat here or there, maybe DH, right field, left field, wherever you need it to be. Because when those guys come up, they're going to need that rock in their lineup. And then once you reach the postseason, we've seen anything can happen. I always thought if the Royals snuck into the wild card game, Last offseason, when they made all these moves to get Benintendi, to get Carlos Santana, Mike Myers, like if they snuck in, they still would not have a chance to win it. But we've seen with the Braves, nobody expected the Braves to do it, especially not with their start to the season. You get to the postseason, anything can happen. And that's where the Royals could get eventually in the near future, maybe 5 years down the road, 4 or 5 years down the road, they're where the Braves are. And they maybe have 88, 89 wins. They're not going to be projected to win at all, but you get there, you can knock off the Dodgers, which the Braves are on the verge of doing now. So that's the team I have the Royals attempting to model. You model the Braves, you put yourself in good position to win championships. With that, it is now time for our favorite segment of Fact or Fiction. 5 questions, 5 takes, under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
Jack, Fact or Fiction, Watson is a Miami Dolphin by Monday.
I know you and me covered this a lot in the beginning of the show. I'm going to go fiction on this because Deshaun Watson is not going to be traded in my eyes. I give it less than a 10% chance, and I don't think it's going to happen this quickly. These are rumors that have kind of been floating around for a couple of months. I just don't see it happening and happening so quickly.
Fact or fiction, Derrick Henry ends up in the Hall of Fame.
I think right now he's the best running back of our generation, especially with yours and mine. I feel, and he's heading that direction. Maybe not has the numbers now, but he's heading to that direction. We're seeing him in his prime now. I feel like he will end up in the Hall of Fame because a guy of that size should not be able to run as fast as he does. And he puts out the numbers week in, week out. He's the scariest running back I think I've ever seen. So, fact, he will be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I'm starting to rethink that whole giving him a 10 yards if the Squid Game version of that came. Yeah, even with that speed. Fact or fiction, Browns win and cover the spread, -2.
Which I believe it just now dropped down to 1.5. So I think they will win and they will cover. I don't see the Broncos offense doing much. It'll be a low-scoring game. Case Keenum at quarterback, they don't have the running game. It'll be like a 17-10 type of game. But I do have them winning and covering, so fact on that.
That's the score I was thinking. Fact or fiction, Zach Wilmon debuts for the Royals next season.
He is 25, so he has that possibility. The Royals do have a lot of bullpen arms. It kind of just comes down to if he stays healthy and there's an opening via injury or maybe somebody struggling at the major league level. I think maybe it's September call-ups. I'll go fact that I could see him then. I haven't seen him pitch. I don't know much on the guy, but I feel like those bullpen openings always seem to happen. So fact, he'll debut next season for the Kansas City Royals.
He has to make the 50-man roster or 40-man roster,
yep,
in order to avoid the Rule 5. All right, lastly, fact or fiction, the Braves and Royals meet in the World Series before 2026.
So 5 years from now, will the team I just modeled the Royals after meet each other? I don't know if the Braves will still be a World Series contender in 5 years. They may be. It's all up in the air. We don't know. It's a possibility. The Royals may not be at that point in 2026. I don't know if those two teams will exactly meet. That seems like a stretch to predict that 5 years from now. So I'll go fiction for now, but I think one of them will be in a World Series before 2030. With that, it is all done. We will see you tomorrow, 10 a.m., 94.5 FM and 1510 ESPN Kansas City. You take it easy, Kansas City.